From the Ravens headquarters and training facility in Owings Mills, Maryland, it is the Banner Ravens podcast. Paul Mancano and Jonah Schaefer in the same place at the same time for the first time in a long time. Thanks so much for tuning in wherever you are watching on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. Please give us a thumbs up, a like. If you're listening to it after the fact, we'd appreciate a good review. We'll read it out here on the podcast. But Jonas, we are here to witness Derrick Henry's glorious purple suit and his press conference alongside John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta. We're going to touch on our thoughts from that press conference, what we learned about Derrick Henry signing and the Ravens' rest of the plans for the offseason. We'll also touch a little bit more on some other ancillary moves in the Ravens' offseason over the last couple days, as we just had a podcast a couple days ago. But first, Jonas, before we get to that, we should talk about the news along the offensive line that broke yesterday, because the Ravens' offensive picture was beginning to take shape. It was going to be a passing attack that was going to be led by Lamar Jackson with Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman maybe having a bounce back year, maybe they add a wide receiver in the draft. The rushing attack was going to be run through Derrick Henry. He is going to be their bell cow back. Everything was taking shape and coming together. And then the picture got a little blurrier, because the Ravens traded away their starting right tackle in Morgan Moses to the New York Jets in exchange for a pick swap in the fourth round, moving up 22 spots, and a sixth round pick. How surprised were you that the Ravens decided to move on from Morgan Moses and not Ronnie Stanley? And how surprised were you that it was a trade instead of some kind of contract restructure or a release and re-sign?
In the vacuum of what Morgan Moses can offer a team in 2024, it was pretty surprising, because you see, like, you know, above average good guards getting $20 million in free agency this week, and you think, oh, Morgan Moses at what, like $6 million salary, $7 million salary, considering what he has been in Baltimore, and considering the fact that from the sounds of it, like a lot of the injuries and stuff that he dealt with last year would be, you know, reparable this offseason. The fact that they were willing to part ways with him was surprising. But on the other hand, this is an organization that I think from the owner on down has a mandate to play the young players. And Daniel Faalele is a guy who has not played a whole lot because of Morgan Moses in front of him. And Faalele has gotten better each of the 2 years that he's been in Baltimore. I think he had a good preseason, not too great of a regular season. But, you know, there's hope and reason to believe, I guess, that by year three, he could be a replacement-level starter in the NFL, and with that, you have the savings of releasing Morgan Moses. So I guess it's not so much the question of, like, whether the Ravens did the right thing in parting ways with him. It's credit to them, if this was always a fait accompli, that they were able to at least get some draft compensation, something that they could do to make their lives easier moving forward, because this was the last year of that deal for Morgan Moses. They have two more years of Daniel Faalele. Maybe he's a good starter next year. Maybe he's a good starter this year. But it still was surprising, because even though it wasn't prime Morgan Moses last year, you know, PFF and some of the metric sites have maybe different accounts of just how good he was. But I thought he was a good player, and I thought he was the kind of player who ages well. I mean, he still runs well, still a terrific open field blocker, you know, had some highlight pancake blocks last year, and terrific locker room guy. But obviously, you know, Eric DaCosta went to his favorite trading partner in the world, the Jets, and said, hey, do you want this guy? And they said, yeah, we'll take him.
We knew that the Ravens were going to have to make some tough decisions salary cap wise, especially to fit in Derrick Henry's 2-year contract. I think the question from fans, though, is just why rob from the offensive line to do so? You already restructured Ronnie Stanley's contract. But did you have to remove your starting right tackle? And say what you want about Daniel Faalele's upside, but when you tweeted out at @Jonas_Schaefer the other day that it is Daniel Faalele's time, season now in Baltimore, there was much wailing and grinding of teeth. And I think for good reason, just because Faalele, for as good as he's looked during preseason and during training camp, he played 186 snaps last year, and PFF had him as grading out terribly, some awful offensive line grades, and that coincided with what we saw with our eyes. He did not pass the eye test. Now, maybe they have more belief in this draft, and Eric DaCosta said today that he wouldn't say historic, but he thinks it's a very good offensive line draft. We thought they would draft along the offensive line early regardless, you know, even if they had kept both Ronnie Stanley and Morgan Moses. But to me, I have this trade just creates a lot of questions. And I kind of wish that they had found a different spot to take some salary cap off the table, or to take some salary off the table to get them in compliance. Because to take away from the offensive line with Lamar's health being paramount, he's now a $260 million quarterback. You are now leaning more into your running game with Derrick Henry. To then take away your starting right tackle just creates a lot of questions that I'm not sure can be answered, you know, through the draft or through Daniel Falalele or Patrick McCary.
Yeah, and even though there was this need, this imperative to play a guy like Falalele or maybe Patrick McCary, you know, I think he's still more of the swing tackle type.
Is there a need to play Daniel Falalele? Like, did they have that much invested in his growth, in his future, that they need to, like, clear the way for Daniel Falalele?
Not really, but, you know, they have their own ways of measuring value, and I guess if they feel like the fall off from Morgan Moses at age 33, age 34, to Daniel Falalele at age, what, 24, 25, however old he is not enough to account for whatever discrepancies in plays there are, then just move forward with the young guy. But to your point, it did seem like there was this nice possibility of a succession plan in place where you keep Ronnie Stanley at left tackle on a reduced contract, keeping Morgan Moses for his last year at right tackle, and then you draft a guy first or second round who potentially could be a guard in year one and then swing out to left tackle or right tackle the next year so that you can be solid, you know, in the present, but also build for the future. And now they've got three jobs to fill. Left, you know, we don't think Kevin Zeitler's coming back. We know John Simpson is now a New York Jet. We know Morgan Moses is now a New York Jet. And
reunited, a little fun little reunion for them.
And it does seem counterproductive in a way to invest all this money in a running back when so much of the Ravens' success over the past couple of years has been one, keeping Lamar Jackson healthy, and two, running behind road grading offensive lines.
Right.
And Daniel Falalele, despite his size, is not yet a great run blocker. We know in pass protection, though, those feet can get a little bit slow, considering someone of his heft and size trying to move around. It can get a little bit dicey when you're going up against the Watts and the Garretts of the world. But, you know, the cop-out answer for all this is the Ravens know more than us when it comes to just where these guys stand, not just performance-wise, but also health-wise. And if they didn't feel great about how Morgan Moses would hold up with another year of potentially 17 games, then I guess they feel justified moving on.
Yeah, and a lot of more names will be discussed as we get closer to the draft. Eric DaCosta did say, you know, they don't have to put a team on the field now. They get to wait until September. So a lot more can be done around the roster. I think when you look at the first round, if they were to make a pick at 30, trade up for an offensive lineman, you're talking about guys like Alabama's C.J. Latham. We've talked about Georgia's Amarius Mims on this podcast as maybe their right tackle of the future, Oklahoma's Tyler Guyton. It just feels like one step forward, one step back. Now, they could fix this problem, and this could be not an issue whatsoever, and we get to the middle of the season and say it was a good move to move on from the veteran. However, at this point, there are questions, and I think it's fair to ask those questions. Let's talk more about Derrick Henry, because we just heard from him. I was thinking a lot about it, Jonas, and thinking about and sending you some late-night thoughts as I was brooding over why the Ravens would make this move. Now, I've said on the last podcast I did like the move because I do still think that Derrick Henry is the anomaly. He is maybe the one or two running backs that is not going to show his age as much as the running backs around the rest of the league, and because he is a different kind of running back, like a supersized Gus Edwards. But Jonas, I was looking back and thinking back to the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs. The defense was not the issue in that game. It was the offense that scored just 10 points in that game. If Eric DaCosta was looking at that game and saying, what could we do to not have that happen again? He could say, how can we get better on offense? And yes, you could hope that your weapons on the outside get better, that Rashad Bateman has a bounce back season, Zay Flowers in his second season takes a step forward. But I don't know if you could substantially improve at wide receiver in free agency, because wide receivers get paid more and get paid later into their careers than running backs. So you're going to have to overpay. So the best that you could maybe do, especially after we saw guys like Mike Evans get extended, we saw Michael Pittman staying with the Colts, the best you could maybe do at wide receiver in free agency is bring back OBJ on a one-year, $7 million deal, and then you're not getting better, you're just staying the same at wide receiver. So Eric DaCosta is looking at this and saying, this is my hypothetical Eric DaCosta, and saying, how are they going to get better on offense? And I think the pivot to running the ball more is what he came up with. And he said, maybe Todd Monken would have run the ball more. Maybe John Harbaugh would have run the ball more. Hopefully they would have in the AFC Championship game and been more successful with the run if they had Derrick Henry in the backfield. So it's a pivot. I think it's a gamble. And because running back is a position that is easier to get in free agency, those players are going to be cheaper and you're going to get them for fewer years than you would a wide receiver. He said, let's get a solid running back in free agency, not worry too much about wide receivers, maybe add a wide receiver or two in the draft, but pivot more towards the running game. That's how we improve on offense. That's how we go back to the AFC Championship game, have put up more than 10 points against the Chiefs, is we have another weapon there that, you know, because we're cap constrained, we had to go with the running back, but a running back is going to change our offense dramatically.
One thing I brought up in our Ravens roundtable this morning, and I'll put it to you, does that now mean that the Ravens are back to being a run-first team?
Right.
And if they are, how do you think that squares with Lamar Jackson's, you know, ha-ha, half-funny desire last year to throw for, what, 5,000 yards,
right,
6,000 yards? We know that he is somewhat self-conscious of the outdated reputation of being a guy who can't pass the ball.
Sure.
But if you are investing all this capital in Derrick Henry and you have Keaton Mitchell and Justice Hill and what Eric DaCosta hopes will be a good run-blocking offensive line, can you be a run-first team and get to the AFC Championship game? And can you have Lamar Jackson be happy about being a run-first team in the year 2024?
The Ravens did everything in their power to make Lamar Jackson happy last offseason. Go get OBJ, pay him $15 million. Obviously extend Lamar and give him $260 million. Upgrade the offensive playmakers in getting Zay Flowers in the first round, a guy that Lamar Jackson liked. Getting Todd Monken, who is a pass-heavy offensive coordinator, giving Lamar Jackson the keys. They did everything they could to make him happy, and it worked during the regular season, and it wasn't enough in the playoffs. So now that he's under contract, now that he already has his second MVP, I don't think that making Lamar Jackson is more important, making him happy is more important than making this offense more effective in the playoffs.
So we're thinking John Harbaugh is, if Lamar comes to him and is like, WTF, mate, does John Harbaugh become John Hamm in Mad Men and say,
That's what the money is for. Yeah, I mean, that's what the money is for. And do you want to win? I mean, if you want to win the Super Bowl and our decision makers think that this is the best way to do it. Now, that doesn't mean that Lamar Jackson can't still have another great year through the air. It doesn't mean that he could not compete for his third MVP. But you have to get over the hump in the championship game. And this is what they thought their best way of doing it was. And if it doesn't work, they'll go back to the drawing board. But it's better than just banging their head against the wall, bringing back OBJ on the same type contract and saying, let's just cross our fingers and hope that everything goes great again. Lamar stays just as healthy as he did. And that we somehow get a different result in the AFC Championship game with another pass-heavy attack. That is not a suitable answer for Eric DaCosta this offseason. So I care less about... I'm not in the building. I don't have to talk to Lamar and make him happy. But personally, I care less about making Lamar happy and more about what do we feel confident in offensively.
And good content.
Yes, and what makes for good content, and this makes for great content.
Yeah, I'm... DaCosta and Harbaugh were not asked about their plans for this offense. And even if they were, I don't think they would have given a straight answer, nor could they have given a straight answer, because as we've talked about, you know, you decide on play calls based on what defenses present, mm-hmm. based on the form that players are in, based on tendencies and offensive plans. So, you know, they could have Derrick Henry be on the field for 80% of the snaps in games next year and maybe still only run the ball like 15, 20 times? You know, it's just how are you going to respond to what defenses show you? And I would imagine that with Derrick Henry in the backfield, if you're lining up with, you know, three wide receivers, one tight end, you know, classic 11 personnel, which was the Ravens' dominant formation last year, then, you know, just like we talked about, it is the old pick your poison situation where are you going to drop a safety into the box
right
to dissuade the Ravens from running the ball? Or are you going to say, hey, if you want to, you know, take this possession up the field 5 yards at a time, we think that one of those times we will do enough on first and second down to put this offense in a third and long or third and medium situation where you don't feel comfortable running the ball. So it's a gamble from Eric DaCosta. Obviously, this has been something that he's been looking forward to for a while. He talked about how, you know, this was a move that he tried to make before the trade deadline last year. It would be interesting to live in that world where the Ravens have Derrick Henry, you know, against the Texans, against the Chiefs. Maybe things are different, or maybe they're not, because what you know mystified the Ravens wasn't their, you know, wasn't the ability of their runners in that game against the Chiefs. It was the run blocking, and it was the inability to handle those guys in pass protection. And I think one thing we haven't discussed, and maybe that there's a incorrect narrative about, is that Derrick Henry is not a good, committed pass blocker. Look at the last 2 years on PFF. He's allowed like one sack in each season, one pressure last year. So I think he's in good shape, and you would hope that a guy like that size would be able to take on guys, pass rushers, in the way that Justice Hill struggled with, that Gus Edwards struggled with. So hopefully he is a three down back option, even though he obviously will not be getting the kind of 300 carry seasons that he was accustomed to in Tennessee. And that's probably, you know, best for the long haul.
Right. And the question comes back to the first part of the podcast, which is how are they going to get better on the offensive line when they're losing Morgan Moses? And if that was the issue against the Chiefs, well, you've just made that a little bit harder by getting rid of Morgan Moses. Again, it doesn't mean that they can't still have a good offensive line next year. What do you think about the overall trend of running backs now suddenly getting paid, now suddenly getting these contracts, these second contracts from teams? Because I was thinking about the three running backs that we had in tier one this offseason as free agents. We had Derrick Henry, we had Saquon Barkley, we had Josh Jacobs. Three guys that in 2023 were stuck behind bad offensive lines on bad teams. Derrick Henry stuck in Tennessee with a bad quarterback. Will Levis might be a good quarterback eventually, but he's a rookie. And Ryan Tannehill, you know, on the back nine of his career, beyond a bad offensive line. You look at Saquon, bad quarterback, bad offensive line play, bad team. Josh Jacobs, bad quarterback, bad offensive line, bad team. Look at the three teams that signed those players. The Packers, the Eagles, the Ravens. Those are three organizations that historically have made excellent decisions in free agency and have been some of the better decision-making organizations in football for the last, two decades, I think you could say. So you're looking at three guys going from bad organizations to good organizations. And these three teams, I think, looked at the salary cap jump, this massive, unprecedented jump in salary cap, said, okay, we have a little bit more money to spend in the next year or two. They looked at the situations for those three running backs in Henry, Saquon, and Josh Jacobs, and they said, let's gamble on running backs being better in better situations, behind better offensive lines, with better quarterbacks in better organizations. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how these three contracts play out for these three teams, but I kind of like the gamble, and I like the idea that they're three of the better organizations in football who are trying to maybe not make an overall statement for the league, but maybe they spot a market inefficiency here, and they're trying to get ahead of this and maybe swing the market back the other way.
Not a whole lot of guaranteed money in those contracts.
True. Yeah. Oftentimes you see the big number, big dollar sign, and it doesn't end up, you know, 3 years ends up probably being 1.5 years of guaranteed money.
Right. Right. And I think it is a team by team situation. You know, like, I don't know if any running back would have been successful for the Giants last year.
Yeah.
But you do wonder if New York had Keaton Mitchell, for instance, like what does that rushing average convey to? Because in Baltimore, it was what, like 7 yards a carry, 8 yards a carry, until he blew out that knee. Does him being in New York on a undrafted rookie contract give the Ravens anything, or give the Giants anything? Does that, how much help does he give them in terms of surplus value with that contract? So on the one hand, I get like the idea of investing in these sure things, but these guys break down. You know what I mean? It's such a tough investment. I asked Eric DaCosta about it today. You know, he talked during the COVID seasons about how you have these greyhound positions like cornerback, like wide receiver, like running back, where guys get hurt. Soft tissue injuries are perpetual risk. And with Derrick Henry, with as many runs on that odometer and as many seasons underneath him, you know, every year that ticking time bomb gets a little bit louder. So I think it's a worthy move considering where the Ravens are in their hunt for a potential Super Bowl. But there is going to be that risk where, you know, it's week 8 in Baltimore and Derrick Henry's on the shelf and the running game is like, you know, 8th in DVOA, and people are wondering why the offensive line can't protect Lamar Jackson, and why Keaton Mitchell isn't healthy yet, and why Justice Hill is only averaging 4.5 yards per carry, and things are not good in Baltimore because of this move. But, you know, you just take Derrick Henry's history for what it is, that he's going to be available, that he's going to be effective, and that he's going to add value to this team in a way that a typical free agent running back would not be able to.
Right. Let's touch on a couple other minor moves here, Jonas. Tyus Bowser, who spent the entire season on the NFI list, he has been released. We saw Patrick Queen finalize his contract and sign his contract with the Pittsburgh Steelers. What was your note on that? That we are an ethical podcast, and like, we like to correct our mistakes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it was surprising to me that it was only 3 years, $41 million, because I initially saw the 3 years, $1 million. I was like, oh, it's $51 million, because that was in line with the projection from PFF. I think they had him as like a $16 to $18 million a year guy. So
you said $51 million?
Well, no, I think I said $41 million, and I computed it to $17 million a year, but it's like 13.6 or something like that. So
gotcha.
For the Steelers to get him at that relative value, I mean, I think that's only $1 million or $2 million more than what he would have cost under that fifth year option had the Ravens exercised it. So, you know, obviously there's probably, you can tell from just that salary amount that there's maybe not as much belief in a Roquan Smith less Patrick Queen than you or I would have. But the fact that the Steelers were able to get a potential three down Pro Bowl level linebacker for considerably less than what the Ravens are paying Roquan Smith, it could be good business, or it could be a situation where Patrick Queen looks like he did, you know, for the first 2.5 years here in Baltimore, he was just, you know, a chicken flying around with his head cut off. But credit to the Steelers, and bad on me for not knowing how to do simple math.
That's okay. That's not my strong suit either. Jonas, one other thing I do want to touch on real quickly, because the Ravens brought back one of their quarterbacks in Josh Johnson, the ageless one, but they could still upgrade at QB2. They could go to the draft to do that. Everybody and every team now, after this first wave of free agency, and all these teams have already, you know, figured out their starting quarterback situation for next year. We got the teams that are sure to draft players in the draft, their next quarterback in the draft. Now there are a lot of teams licking their chops, looking at the Justin Fields situation, and maybe teams thinking, if this guy can be got for a day 3 pick, or maybe a late 3rd-round pick, he could be a nice backup for a year. He does have that 5th-year option for next year, which if you're trading for him as a backup, you know, you're not going to pick up that 5th-year option, so because it's just going to cost too much money. So you're really only getting Justin Fields for a year. However, maybe he comes in, if your quarterback gets injured, he plays well, he signs a contract with another team to be a starting quarterback in the 2025 offseason, then you get a good comp pick in the 2026 draft. That's a lot of things to happen for this to be good value. What would be good value for you to get 1 year of Justin Fields as your backup?
I think this is like next level. This is 40 chess that we're talking about.
Yes.
And I don't think this is a move that the Ravens would make, but maybe they would. It's just, you know, you have this higher 4th-round pick than they did before with the Morgan Moses pick swap. maybe you offer a fourth round pick to the Bears, and you know, according to the reports, there's not much of a market for Justin Fields right now. Like, they're just not getting calls about, you know, do you want this guy? So why not offer a fourth round pick to possibly bolster that backup QB spot?
Yeah.
We don't know if Malik Cunningham is that guy next year. The only snaps that he played, you know, in a real live game this past year were at wide receiver. Josh Johnson turns 38 next year, and you know, he's definitely not a fit for the kind of designed run game that the Ravens would have. So, you know, let's say Justin Fields arrives in Baltimore, costs you only a fourth round pick. You know, maybe Lamar gets hurt, knock on wood. Justin Fields goes in for a couple games, does a good job. You look at like what it would take to kind of qualify him for, you know, a potential third or fourth round compensatory pick next year. It's not a lot, like relative to the QB market.
Right.
I should say, like, you know, you get a third round compensatory pick for a guy getting, you know, $15 million a year, $18 million a year, $20 million a year. And if Kirk Cousins is getting, what, $45 million a year, how much or how little would Justin Fields have to show you as a potential pending free agent to get that kind of contract on the open market? Because, you know, the Ravens clearly don't have much of an appetite for paying backup quarterbacks at this spot. But if you can get that kind of security for at least a year, if they believe in what he offers a potential team as a backup, and we don't know if he would even want to be, you know, he doesn't have that much control over where he will, you know, can go at this point. But I would imagine he would like to go to a place where he could compete for a quarterback one spot. Right. But, you know, you come to Baltimore, you learn under T. Martin, you are buddy-buddy with Lamar. Maybe you potentially turn that fourth-round pick and year of backup quarterback security into a compensatory third-round pick.
Right.
Just something to consider.
Yeah, and I think he would be better, at least in this one year, as a backup to Lamar than the average fourth-round quarterback. Like, if you use that fourth-round pick that you would be trading for Justin Fields to get, like, Michael Pratt from Tulane, is he going to be good in year one? And if Lamar goes down, are you going to trust him to control that offense and keep you afloat in the AFC North?
Right.
Probably not. At least maybe eventually he will be, but probably not. So it would be a gamble.
We're a year removed from an offseason spent hand-wringing, not just about the Lamar contract situation, but about the Lamar health situation.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
1 year of Lamar making it through the season relatively unharmed should not be enough to give everyone the full faith and confidence that this guy is going to be able to make it through a 17-game season, even with Derrick Henry probably taking somewhat of the pressure off of him in the design run game. You know, yep. Guys still get hurt on scrambles. Guys still get hurt in the pocket.
Exactly. That just about does it for the Banner Ravens podcast here today from the castle in Owings Mills. At @Jonas_Schaefer is his Twitter handle. I am at Paul Mancano and also at All Banner Sports. Please subscribe to the Baltimore Banner, $1 for 6 months, where you can read all of Jonas's great work, all of Gianna Hahn's great work. She floated around behind the camera during this podcast trying to distract us today. Great stuff. Kyle Goon as well, writing some great pieces about the Baltimore Ravens. And we are not sure quite yet when we will podcast next. I think potentially, if nothing happens over the next 4 days, we're looking at another Tuesday podcast. But breaking news could always change our plans, so keep your eye out for the next episode. Please like, review, rate, subscribe, all that good stuff. Thanks so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. And for Jonas Schaefer, I'm Paul Mancano. Catch you next time.